What's up, guys? Welcome to the Locked On Clippers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I am Honest Chuck Mockler, joined by no one this week, as William the Opinion Updike is overseas in Europe, undoubtedly doing some scouting for the Los Angeles Clippers. We hope he's doing well. Today, we're going to talk a bit about, hopefully the last thing we ever talk about with Jimmy Butler. There's a new team in play. There has been some rumors that the Wolves have been asking absolutely absurd things for him. We're going to get into that. Bit of a weekend preview for the Clippers coming up. They got their first preseason game, and then we're going to go over some potential lineups that a couple of journalists have seen. So we're going to start that up right now. I read this morning something that probably blew most people's minds who read it, was that the Timberwolves were reportedly asking from the 76ers for Ben Simmons for Jimmy Butler, which is something I think we can all agree is absolutely insane. I don't really know what is happening within the Wolves organization right now. I don't think anyone really does. They're all over the place. I don't think any of us expected such, tizzy, for lack of a better word, for an entire organization to be thrown into. Thinking that Jimmy Butler has the same value as Ben Simmons is truly insane, for lack of a better word. And at this point, I really don't know. This feels like a Le'Veon Bell situation. I think maybe a little bit out of order, but I don't think Jimmy Butler is going to suit up for the Wolves at all this season. I think he will definitely be with a different team. And if he's not, I don't think he's going to play. I don't think the Wolves want to play a guy who seemingly doesn't want to be there, except for Tibbs, who somehow envisions success with Jimmy Butler. Tibbs' brain is stuck in a time machine, so hopefully he gets out of that soon. Hopefully the Wolves move on from this horrible situation, and hopefully we can all move on from this horrible situation. One team that might help us move on to that is the Rockets, who are somehow in play for Jimmy Butler. People who are much more knowledgeable about contracts than I am can probably shed some light into that. It's reported they will need a third team since they can't eat a giant contract again, as they're already, I think, two of their players make up over almost 25% of their cap space. So that's going to be an interesting development. I think the Rockets, if they got Jimmy Butler, would be absolutely terrifying, depending what they had to give up. But even if they had to give up some pretty big supporting pieces, a lineup that had Butler, Harden, CP3, and Capella in it, I think could run, and, you know, whoever at the four, I guess, could run with anyone in the league. I think that would be a very terrifying lineup. Defensively, it would be good. I just don't know. I just don't know how they're going to make that work. There's been talks that the Suns are going to be involved if Butler gets moved, so they can get a good point guard. Shame that they got rid of three of their good point guards. But it all remains to be seen. There's a bunch in the air. I don't think Butler's going to end up at any of his preferred destinations at this point. I don't think the Wolves are going to help him do that. And I wouldn't be surprised if they're just trying to ship him out of the Western Conference so they can maybe get the seventh seed. I don't know. If any Wolves fans are listening, let me know what you think your ceiling is now. I think it's going to be low. No offense to them, but seems like the organization is in turmoil and they're not really equipped to handle it. There was recently, today actually, if we can kind of get on some more Clippers stuff. Today, it came out that Blake Griffin had commented that the Clippers fans aren't knowledgeable, but then just before I started recording this, he clarified his remarks to say that he wasn't used to being around fans in a quote-unquote sports town. What I think he means here is, you know, he played on the Clippers, which is very much considered the little brother, I guess, to the Lakers, so he wasn't used to having the focus on him and the fans being as locked in, or locked on, if you will, to the stats and the team like that. So I can kind of understand what he was saying. I do wish we could all, Blake and the fans, could kind of move past this weird animosity everyone seems to have about the Lob City days. During the heyday, it was absolutely fun. Everyone loved it. Everyone was having a good time. But now it feels like there's all this weird animosity that's being kicked up for absolutely no reason. Clippers fans, as far as I know, I mean, I'm not mad at Blake at all. I'm a lot less mad at him now that he clarified his remarks. But at the same time, keep us out of your mouth, Blake. Come on, you're playing the Eastern Conference now. It's totally fine. Branching out, so the little brother thing kind of helps segue into, there's a great Ringer article about Boban and how Boban is kind of universally loved. He's one of the few players who can kind of meet this, just like everyone loves him. No one has any bad thing to say about Boban, which makes sense. He's lovable. He's a goofy dude. He's got a great sense of humor. He's kind. And he is built like no human we've ever really seen before in the NBA. And so it seems like with the Bobby and Toby show and how good our media team seems to have been in the past couple months, it seems like the Clippers are moving less from the annoying little brother phase into the funny little brother phase. It seems like the hatred for the Clippers is maybe waning thanks to, you know, Toby and Bobby and, you know, Lou Williams. And we got Patrick Beverley with some fantastic quotes from the preseason talking about how we're tough as, you know, I can't really curse on this podcast, but you can read the quote. And so I like this transition. I think it's good to go from maybe the annoying little brother to the funny little brother. But this season, hopefully, we're going to be maybe back to the annoying little brother just because we're going to be such a pain to play against. The Ringer article about Beaumont is great. They go on a sightseeing tour for celebrity homes, which is fantastic. He's skeptical, as most people are, of those tours. Check that out on theringer.com. Coming up, there's some great insight from Hawaii from Jovan Buha about possible lineups. So we're going to get into that right after this. So now we can talk about some great insight from Jovan over in Hawaii. After this, we're going to maybe, I might do some Love, Marry, Kill with these potential lineups. Who knows? We got a bit of a weekend preview too. So if I have time, we'll get into that. Noted for first and second units from Jovan, he saw practicing yesterday. The black jersey team was Patrick Beverley, Avery Bradley, Tobias, Gallo, and Gortat versus the white jersey team, which was Shea, Lou, Sendarius, Luka Mbamute, and Boban. He remarked that this seems like potential first and second units, though tough to think since Trez isn't in either of those. If we're looking at the first unit, let's call it, let's assume that it's Beverley, Bradley, Tobias, Gallo, and Gortat. That's a wonderful complementary lineup and a very defensive-minded one, at least with Beverley and Bradley. At the one and the two, you have two guys who want to guard pretty much one through four on the court. They're tenacious. They're long. That's a fantastic 1-2 punch right there. And then offensively, you have great spacing with Tobias and Gallo. Gortat's a bit, he's not a black hole at all. We've talked about on this podcast before about how his screen setting ability, how he can kind of stop and pop a little bit off the screens. Not, you know, in some Karl Anthony Towns mid-range-esque, really, or with any real three-point range, but he has much more range than DeAndre had, where teams are going to expect more than just driving for a dunk or rolling to get that alley-oop. But with those, I mean, Beverley's an okay shooter. Bradley's a fine shooter. Tobias and Gallo on the wings really opens up the whole offense. I think because Gortat is still seemingly in such great shape, he's going to be moved around a lot to set those screens. And if Tobias and Gallo can work on their screen game together with their pick and roll or whatever they end up figuring out, if they can work together, I think it's very conceivable that both these guys put up 20 points a game pretty easily. Maybe not easily. That's being optimistic. But this first lineup does seem like it has a very nice balance of scoring and defense. The team, Beverly's been quoted saying that this team wants to be tough and we are tough as S. You know the rest. It's great to hear. It seems like the identity is really being rooted in defense, which we need. If we're going to be competitive in this terrifying Western Conference, we are going to need some defense. So that first lineup, I think everyone can be pretty content with. We talked about on Wednesday some potential closeout lineups that had Gallo playing the five. We were kind of skeptical of how that's going to work out. A lot of you guys on Twitter are really skeptical too. And I think maybe rightfully so. Gallo's got some injury issues. If he's going to be on the court in the starting lineup and in the closing lineup guarding the fives, that seems like a lot of abuse his body's going to take, which hopefully he can stand up to. Health is always an issue with him. We don't have to beat that to death. Now we can kind of move on to the white jersey team, which was the second unit, as Jovan pointed out, which I think this is a very encouraging look that we're seeing right now. This is Shea at the one, Lou at the two, Sin at the three, Luka Mbamute at the four, and then Boban at the five. You have to think that Boban is maybe not going to be cemented as the backup center. I think that would be, personally, I think that would be disrespectful to Trez based on his ability and his energy, and kind of foolish just because Boban can't play too many minutes because his body is legitimately too large to do that. So that will probably get moved around. You think that Trez will probably be a utility piece that gets rotated in situations. That hopefully doesn't hurt his minutes too much, because I think a lot of us want to see Trez out there bringing his energy and just, yeah, his energy, his post moves. You want to see him out there a lot. I think everyone listening to this probably in their heart of hearts, no matter how much we love Boban, would like to see Trez get more playing time this year than Boban. That would be wonderful. The most encouraging thing about this lineup is that if this is the potential second unit, we got Shea in the second unit. We have him for sure cemented at getting meaningful minutes in a unit with a lot of experienced guys. You have Lou Williams right there he can learn from. Sindarius, not as experienced, so kind of on that Shea side of learning from people around him. Luke Mbamute is another great guy to kind of play with and learn rotations with. The second unit, not as good defensively as the first with Beverly and Bradley in there, but the scoring seems on par with that first unit. So the scoring drop-off, again, these are just potential lineup ideas or things that Jovan has seen from the scrimmages. That second unit potentially has a little less, but not too far of a drop-off for scoring-wise. You got Lou, who might average, who knows, maybe 22 points off the bench again. It remains to be seen what Shea will average. But Sindarius Thornwell is a guy who, big pod favorite, Thorn God, big shout out to Thorn God. He's a guy who this year I think is gonna, I don't know if prove people wrong is the right phrase, because I don't think people have even really been thinking about him. No disrespect, just no one seems to be thinking about the Clippers really, especially these types of players. I think he's gonna shut some people up, whatever you want to say it. I think he's gonna have an amazing year. Last year he proved he absolutely belongs on an NBA court, be it in the second unit. Maybe that's his ceiling right now. That's fine. He seems comfortable with it. He wants to contribute. He's a player this year who I am so excited to see get some more minutes, because he's earned those minutes. This team is not giving anything to any of the players on it. Doc doesn't seem like he's doing that. He wants to see people who are going to fight. You know, this team is, for lack of a better term, a junkyard dog. They want that mentality. They want to slow teams down. They want to tire teams out to the point where they break their will. And I think maybe we'll see some rotations with Beverly and Bradley down on the second unit, especially if Milos is going to get some playing time. There's no way we can have Milos and Lou on the floor at the same time defensively, at least in my eyes. So hopefully we can grind these guys down. Luke Mbamute in the second unit is probably the strongest defender, definitely the strongest defender. So he's going to have a lot of responsibility if this is really going to be the second unit to kind of help out and cover and spy for guys like Lou. Shea's weight is still a bit of a concern for me defensively. He said he's gotten stronger, but he hasn't necessarily added too many pounds to his frame, which we all know is a process. I guess we have to trust this weight gaining process. But Luke's going to be pretty relied upon in this second unit to make up for some defensive shortcomings. Which is where I think the Trez-Boban switch comes into play. I don't think we have Boban. Maybe he starts a little bit in the second unit to kind of cap it off. Or excuse me, to kind of just start it off. And then Trez comes in to maybe cap off if we're leaking points or something like that. With how hard Trez works, I'm really, you know, it's really hard for me to believe that they're not going to give him time that he deserves. Absolutely. So those two lineups, I mean, top to bottom, pretty solid. 1 through 10 right there are all guys who, again, I feel like you can move these pieces around lineup to lineup, and it's not too big of a drop-off. It feels like this team is really built for situational basketball, which the NBA seems to be moving towards. You know, we've talked about on this podcast how even if Trez isn't the starting center on day one, if he isn't listed as the first number five, he still may, you know, lead the team in minutes played at the center position. So it definitely seems like they're kind of getting some situational lineups ready, which, you know, is just in time, because we finally can do a bit of a preview for the Clippers' upcoming basketball game against the Sydney Kings in beautiful Hawaii. I will not be getting to attend, unfortunately. But this is, I believe this is on at 6:30 Pacific time. Don't quote me on that. I will double check it. But this, I can't describe how excited I am for this. I want to see Shea against a little more competition than Summer League. I think if someone out there is familiar with the Sydney Kings, let me know if they're better than a Summer League team. I'm assuming they are. Maybe for my own personal piece, so I can see these guys do well against better competition. But I am just itching to see how Shea looks in this offense. Hasn't been too much time together so far with these guys. I think they're going to have three, maybe four practices before the game starts. But what I'm looking forward most to, other than Shea and Jerome, who evidently might be in the third unit or is working his way up into the second unit right now, is really how our center rotations work. It's maybe the weakest part of our team, just talent-wise. It's not terrible, but it definitely is kind of even keel across the board. I'd say all those guys are kind of like 75 to 79 range, if we're going to use 2K ratings, which I guess I am. I think that is going to be pretty pivotal to a lot of our success this year, especially in the beginning, that tough stretch of games. We need guys at the five who can, right off the bat, defend really well, which Gortat, Trez, you know, Trez mostly because of his energy can. Gortat is a comparable defender. Boban is a giant human being, which helps him. But I really want to see how the centers play. I want to see how the centers rotate in and out with each unit. I really, Shea and Gortat should, in my brain, hopefully get a lot of playing time together. Gortat knows so much about the pick and roll that his knowledge is going to be indispensable for someone like Shea, who's going to learn how to really run it, how Gortat wants it run, how Gortat can give him pointers on how to run an effective pick and roll. And that's going to be kind of the heart of, I think that's really going to be a big factor in Shea getting times with the ones, which may happen during the game. It would be nice to see Shea out there with Avery, Tobias, Gallo, and Gortat. I think that's a potential scorching lineup to have. But I really want to see, I'm excited to see what centers get playing time, how they rotate in and out. Where Trez is used is going to be very interesting. I think he brings a lot to the table utility-wise, so it might just be difficult for Doc right now to know even where to put him, but he still might have a place. So center, I'm really looking forward to. Another thing I'm really looking forward to seeing is, I mean, Jerome. He's been kind of quiet. We haven't heard a lot from him. Update-wise in the scrimmages from Hawaii, so we can only assume all is well. Positionally, this feels like a real battle for the last two guys on the roster. We still got to cut two people. I can't imagine what's going through their minds right now. I genuinely feel bad for them. I feel bad for Doc. This is going to be a tough couple of weeks. I do think the Clippers are going to beat the Sydney Kings. If we don't, maybe I'll flip out and we'll burn the Staples Center down or something like that. But that's happening. I believe it's on at 6:30. It's going to be on NBA TV so we can watch it. I'm going to do my best to catch that game. Coming up, we're going to do a little bit of love, marry, kill on those lineups. But first, guys, Locked On NBA has never gone away. We've had a bit of a slow offseason, but Locked On NBA, the namesake, has been here for you. Locked On NBA is your daily national NBA podcast. Check out the biggest stories from the local experts, and then stay with Locked On NBA all week with daily 30 minutes on everything going on in the NBA. There's a team preview coming up next week, so stay tuned for that. Follow for free at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play that podcast, the Locked On NBA podcast. So love, marry, kill, a bit of a short one today. I'm going to kind of go through these potential lineups. The first lineup that I'm going to say that I would love is actually that Shea, Lou, Sendarius, Luka Bamute, and Boban lineup. I love that lineup because I think as a second unit, you get a good balance of scoring along with a lockdown four. Let's assume he's still a lockdown four just for our own mental capacity, I guess. Let's assume he's a lockdown four. And then I really love it just because Shea's getting all that playing time. It'd be fun to hang out with this group. I think we'd have a really good time. Maybe a little too serious with Luke and Bamute bringing us down on our giant group date, but still a fun time. Lou and Shea together, that's fantastic. I hope Shea can kind of learn from Lou's streakiness on how to get to the bucket and just kind of annoy people. That's the lineup I'm loving. The lineup I'm marrying is actually going to be the third lineup. I'm going to marry it strictly for Jerome. That third unit, I hope a lot of those guys get more playing time. I hope Trez isn't in the third unit. If he's in the third unit, I would maybe kill this lineup just because I couldn't deal with that egregiousness. But that remains to be seen. I would marry this lineup. Jerome, he's a loyal guy. We all know about him in Boston College. Trez is loyal too. He's still with the team. That's wonderful. The lineup I'm actually going to kill is maybe that first lineup. Is the Avery Bradley, Patrick Beverley, Tobias, Gallo, and Gortat lineup. I'm going to kill this lineup because I don't think Gortat should be starting, and I would love to see Shea starting either next to Bradley, or we run a two-point guard situation with P-Bev. I'm killing this lineup because this is, I guess, the most boring lineup in my eyes. This is a lineup I think a lot of us assumed was going to happen. That's not necessarily a bad thing at all, but it would be nice to see some new wrinkles in this first lineup. I guess we can count Gallo as a new wrinkle because he played, I don't know, one-third of a game last year. So that's the lineup that I would kill. Really, I'm just mostly excited to see all of these lineups play on Sunday. We're going to hopefully get that very crucial preseason win under our belts. Yeah, that's coming up. Guys, 15 days out, we're going to be doing some player profiles coming up. I'm very excited about it. That's all today for the Locked On Clippers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Get at me on Twitter. I'm on it all day. Love interacting with you guys, and I'll see you Monday.